Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, August 20th, 2012. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time and from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Time. And remember that our shows are available 24-7 on DrSaputo.com and PRN.FM.
Today, you're going to hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 20 to the hour. And we've got a great show for you today that's going to include what practice reduces loneliness, stress, and inflammation.
And what common drugs cause cancer?
Should MDs be paid on the basis of their performance? That is a wild one.
And what will the Affordable Care Act do to quality of care, cost, and MD availability?
And how about lack of exercise? Should we call that a disease? Interesting studies out of the Mayo Clinic that we'll share with you.
And if you'd like to join in our conversation and have questions about our topics or your health, give us a call on Mondays from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Time or 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN.FM at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Most of us have felt lonely at some time in our lives, and maybe after a divorce, the death of a loved one, children leaving the nest, even being home alone or a newcomer at school or at work or what have you. But what about the elderly who've lost a spouse and many of their friends and their children have scattered and they're living their own lives? We're going to talk about some of the effects of loneliness and how they can affect our health. And there was a study that recommends an effective method of reducing loneliness that you can do alone.
Great. It's called mindfulness-based stress reduction. It sounds complicated, but it's really not. It's just about being in the what I call the zone of life. It's like when you get connected and you're right there. Sometimes when I play tennis, about once every year or so, I'm in that zone and nothing else is in my mind and I'm right there.
Well, it's being present.
It's being absolutely present. So nothing else is on your mind. You're not thinking. You're just kind of noticing what's happening as life unfolds.
And the thing that's kind of cool about this study is it shows that it can reduce inflammation because loneliness can lead to inflammation and it can even reduce our immunity.
It's kind of interesting. These people from UCLA published in the journal Brain Behavior and Immunity a study where for 8 weeks they did meditation. And they had 40 people aged 55 to 85, and one group had the mindfulness meditation and the other group didn't. Then they evaluated people using a loneliness scale and also a blood test that looked for markers of inflammation. The group that had the treatment had a weekly two-hour meeting. They had the practice of mindfulness meditation for 30 minutes a day and a one-day-long retreat. And this was all just over 8 weeks. And the results, to my surprise, showed that there was a lot less loneliness and there was less expression of inflammatory genes, which is really something kind of impressive. So here we have a study that's showing that what you feel and think and what your belief system is has a profound effect on how much anxiety you have, how much stress you experience, and inflammation in your body.
It can even have a serious impact on Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, depression, premature death. I mean, let's talk a little bit about these inflammatory genes and about, you know, our CRP and those kind of things.
Well, see, what happens is when we have inflammation in our body and our markers go up, we have a way of tracking it. And what we think and what we believe and how we feel affects in an epigenetic way what happens to our DNA. It actually changes our DNA, changes the way our genes express, and changes the way that we behave. So it's something that's really worthwhile to pay attention to. And the whole idea of looking at a study like this is very encouraging because it gives you the idea that there's a lot you can do. And a lot of people, not just older people, have problems with loneliness. So, you know, what we think and what we feel makes a huge difference.
Well, you know, this is even good for the caretakers, especially for the caretakers. They're often neglected. And they were recommending in this study that Tai Chi and yoga and chanting could be helpful for the patient, and that it could also be helpful for the caregiver. Actually, it could be helpful for all of us.
Well, I mean, that's one of the things that we strive for. You know, I think that a lot of the yogis think that enlightenment is when you're in this zone of presence constantly. And then you're just noticing how things go by and you're reacting in a way that is authentic, which means you're congruent with how you feel. You wear your feelings on your shoulder. You say what you think. That's real authenticity. And there's no thinking that goes into the how you do that.
And what about just being with the elderly that are lonely? You know, they need attention and they need our time. And many people, I think, they believe that if they get a proper caretaker for their loved one, that everything's taken care of and it's okay, and then they can just go about on their own lives. But what about how they do it in other countries? You know, some of these other countries, they have the elderly come and they live with them in their homes. Well, certainly that could cause an extra amount of stress, particularly if you have little kids and that sort of thing. However, it's something that's really important. I mean, how would you like to just get old and then just be forgotten and have nobody come and visit you and take care of you?
Well, it's a sad reflection of the degeneration of the family in America and in most industrialized countries that we call civilized. And it really is telling us that there's so much dysfunctionality when we're kids that we learn that separate us from our families. And a lot of us, both parents are working. You become what I call a latchkey kid, or somebody who has a nanny that comes in and takes care of them, or maybe you're spending your life in a playpen with a bottle, or you're in front of a TV set. That isn't what we really need to develop deep family relationships that will last through a lifetime.
You know, and children learn the most by our actions.
Absolutely.
And the way we take care of ourselves, the way we take care of them, and how we take care of our own parents, which reminds me of that story, you know, of the couple with the little boy, and they had an elderly parent living with them. I forget if it was whose father-in-law or whose father it was. But anyway, the father, the grandfather of the little boy. And he was starting to bother them because he would drool and he would, make noises and he'd make a mess and they'd have to put a bib on him and everything. So finally they put him over at a separate table in a corner away from the family meal.
Right.
And then one day the little boy was playing and he was building blocks and that kind of thing. And one of the parents asked him what he was doing. And he says, "Well, I'm building a table and I'm getting it all set up for when you're old."
Right.
So they let grandpa sit back at the table with them again after that. But you know, this is so true because this is what happens.
If you're present, you're not so much focused on the intelligence of the person. You're really focused on who they are. And that comes from a whole lifetime of experience. And as we age, things happen. And we need to adapt. And it's not, I'm not saying that combative people who will do things that are not a good idea should be living in the home. But most of the time, people who are living in nursing homes could be living at home, but they just aren't.
Well, you know, this is a really good book. It's called The Boomer's Guide to Aging Parents, and it's by Carolyn Rosenblatt.
I like the book.
And she's an RN, and she's also an attorney. Mm-hmm. And in this book, she talks about home care and assisted living and nursing homes and geriatric care managers and handling money and family conflicts, all that kind of thing around old people. And she brings up things that we probably wouldn't even know to think up or questions to ask. And I think it should be a Bible in people's homes that have elderly parents. Because do you want to can you afford to have a caregiver in the parent's home? That would be really great. Mm-hmm. Somebody to watch and make sure they're not going to burn the house down or fall or what have you. But there's also assisted living and there's nursing homes and all these things. So it's a topic that everybody needs to know something about.
Well, I think that's right. What we tend to use in today's medical world is a lot of drugs to control people like that. And the drugs do what? I mean, they balance your neurotransmitters in a way so they look better. They make you feel a little better. They kind of like turn off those areas of the brain that are the ones that are causing the problems that we can't deal with so well. And we should be not thinking about suppressing things like that so much. We should be going back to using approaches that are more thoughtful and more present. that are dealing with the person themselves rather than suppressing their symptoms.
You know, too, I was thinking about that movie Benjamin Button.
Oh, yeah.
And how they did everything backwards, how
right.
he ended up, you know, starting out as an
old
man, and then when at the end he was the baby or the fetus.
Right.
But, you know, I think it's a good thing for us to all think about, because in the circle of life, it kind of happens to many of us as we get older. Many of the older people become like children. I mean, they become incontinent. They need help to do things. They might need to be fed. They need to be loved. They need to be rocked and held and given touch, the importance of touch.
Absolutely.
So we don't want them to be lonely for a lot of reasons, and besides the fact that it can increase inflammation.
Well, that's right. And what we tend to do is we give older people more drugs than we give younger people, and they've got less reserve, and their brains don't hold it well, and so they wind up with lots of symptoms. And it's not unusual for somebody who's older to be taking 5 or 10 or even 15 drugs, and you put them in the hospital, it's unusual they're not on 10 or more drugs.
Well, and then they become confused, and it's like no wonder they're on all these drugs besides the fact that maybe they had a little bit of it. And then you wonder why they get belligerent when the hospital ties them up and all that kind of thing. So, you know, we talked recently about the how lavender oil or lemon balm, things like essential oils can be helpful for the elderly to help them to relax. So we need to be thinking of different ways. And maybe if you can't teach them how to meditate, maybe just some relaxing music. You know, Stephen Halperin, he has
some
wonderful healing sound music. It's like
I work with his music all the time. I leave it on the computer when I'm doing work that I'm not too stimulated to do.
Especially that deep theta. I love that.
It's wonderful. Yeah, and it puts you in a state where you're focused and concentrated. It's almost like magic.
But he also has these healing sounds for relaxing and for sleep.
How about putting that in
for meditation
in the hospitals, in the convalescent hospitals, in the residential care facilities? What a beautiful way to handle things that way. I love that. The idea of over-drugging people, or just drugging people at all, just really kind of turns me off. I've had a whole lifetime of watching that happen. And now when patients come to my office, probably the first thing I'm thinking about is, what medicines are you on? And which ones can I get rid of? Which ones do you really need, because they're going to be important at making the quality of your life better or saving your life? You know, pharmaceutical drugs are a wonderful thing if they're used appropriately, but they are a total disaster if they're used as the primary thing that we focus on to manage people's behavior. Look at people that are anxious and depressed, and bipolar people and schizophrenics. We've got them on more drugs, and even our kids now. You know, we talked last week about the antipsychotic drugs that are being so often used on kids who have ADD or kids that are depressed. And the effect that has is never, ever to solve the underlying biochemical or physiological or emotional or spiritual problem. It doesn't solve that. You've got to solve that yourself. And the way you do that is by having someone with you who can listen and care and support you as you're going through this process, where usually you're really stressed.
Well, the other thing is, too, I've heard many people say, when there's an elderly relative or parent, what have you, why go visit them? They don't remember anyway.
Oh, dear.
But you know something? It's the same thing as being present when we talk about meditating, because they know when you're there. They might forget in 5 minutes or the next time you come back or whatever.
Well, look at people in the ICU.
While you're there with them, they know you're there with them. And if you really love somebody, you want to be with them. Well, maybe it's stressful, you know, when they get restless and all that kind of thing. But if your baby were doing that, you'd be with your baby because you love your baby.
And you'd understand. Yeah. We have less room for understanding with older people who are a little demented.
But if you're coming from a good place where you want to be with them because you love them and it makes you feel better, that's where it really is.
It is.
Rather than feeling like you're a martyr and you're over there doing it for them and they're not even appreciating me. They don't even know I'm there. And
you don't even have to know the person to be able to help them. You know, how about the story when you were in the ICU and this person was thrashing around and I think she couldn't see?
Yes, she was blind and she was intubated, which meant that she couldn't
speak. Had a tube in her throat. Yeah. What happened
with
that
story? Well, she was having a huge amount of pain in her abdomen.
You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Lynn Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number, if you have a question about your health or want to participate in our conversation, is 888-874-4888. We're in the middle of a conversation that Vicki was talking about that had to do with a person who was in the ICU that was blind and intubated so that she couldn't really respond, and she was thrashing around. The ICU nurses were having a really difficult time managing. So go on with that story, Vicki.
So anyway, she was having all this pain in her abdomen. So I did like a guided meditation with her, and we did a little bit of prayer, and I did a little bit of Reiki, and to end up the story, she fell asleep. Yeah. And the nurses were standing there with their mouths open, not knowing what happened, and asked me how this happened, you know. But a lot of what it is it's being with somebody and just being present. And I don't even remember what I said, but whatever I said and came out of my mouth,
it was calming and loving and listening and caring. Yeah, it
exactly,
was all those wonderful
all
things.
Those things. And now they teach.
Looks like we're having some technical problems here, but I think we're back online here. So it's difficult for nurses to have the time to do the things that they want to do. We really need to find a way to change the way medicine's practiced in this country so that there's more listening and caring and loving that's going on. So I think that's a transition that's really an important one to make.
So it's important to be with our loved ones so that they won't be so lonely.
Well, exactly. Okay. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Lynn Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. Again, the number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
With inflammation a major cause of disease, you know, it's good to live a healthy lifestyle to prevent inflammation, you know, with getting enough sleep and exercise and stress reduction and having a meaningful purpose in life, meditating and having a healthy diet. And here's something that you can add to your diet or even use it topically to reduce inflammation. So I hope you like spicy, because we're talking capsaicin, and chili peppers are high in capsaicin. And chili peppers can, you know, make your tongue feel a little hot or even give you a tear in your eye. And they often use them in spicy Mexican food or Szechuan, Indian, Thai food, that kind of thing. But capsaicin is what is making it hot. And it's a potent inhibitor of a neuropeptide that's associated with inflammation. And the hotter the chili pepper, the more capsaicin it contains. And jalapenos are next in their capsaicin content, followed by milder varieties like Spanish pimentos. I think pimentos are what they use in green olives.
Yeah, but they don't seem so hot there, do they?
No. And cherry peppers?
Yep.
It's also being studied as an effective treatment for sensory nerve fiber disorders, that include pain, especially associated with arthritis, certain types of psoriasis, and very importantly, diabetic neuropathy.
Uh-huh.
And topical capsaicin is now recognized as a treatment option for these types of pain. You need to be careful, though. You know, I remember one time I had it on my back, and it really did burn a lot. So you might want to just try a little bit at a time, a little small area first, and see how you do with it. So the red chili peppers, such as cayenne, those have cardiovascular benefits that are significant. Also, they can clear congestion. They can boost immunity. They can help stop the spread of prostate cancer. They actually trigger cancer cell suicide. And some excessive intake, you know, everything is supposed to be done in moderation, and they've found that excessive intake of hot chilies has been linked to stomach cancer, so you don't want to go overboard. But it can actually, capsaicin can prevent stomach ulcers by killing bacteria that you might have ingested while stimulating the cells lining the stomach to secrete protective buffering juices. And I'm just wondering, it doesn't mention H. pylori, but
oh, you'd have to think it would do something to stop that. That, I think, would probably be true.
It also helps people to lose weight because you burn so many calories when you eat this hot stuff.
If you eat too much of it, it also give you a little diarrhea.
Now, chilies also lower the risk of type 2 diabetes. They lower your insulin level and requirements of the insulin. And capsaicin chilies also can contain antioxidants, including vitamin C and carotenoids. So spice up your meals with chili peppers. And also paprika and cayenne pepper are included in this group. And I've never thought that paprika was very spicy or tasted like much of anything. So if you like your food mild and you don't want to eat all this hot, spicy flavoring, go for that. And just to give you a few quick serving ideas, sauteed vegetables, you could add some hot peppers, cornbread, a yogurt, maybe to make a condiment or a dip. Put jalapenos in your tuna salad. That's really good.
That really is good.
Curry dishes, you know, and so on and so forth. And also, remember that it can burn your eyes or your hands. Mm. And so if you've touched it, it can stick to your skin. So you have to wash your hands thoroughly before you do that. I remember one time I did that. I was eating something had chili on it. It was a like an hors d'oeuvre kind of thing. And I rubbed my eye, and then my eye started burning. So then I kept rubbing it some more. And I kept going into the bathroom and trying to wash it out. And finally somebody said, it's probably what you're eating and touching and putting in your eye. So if you can't take the heat, you can cool off with a glass of milk, because the protein casein that's in the milk can help douse that capsaicin fire. So spice up your life and your health and add peppers that are high in capsaicin into your diet. And if you don't like spicy, use those pimentos or the cherry peppers or the paprika. And if you want to learn more about this, you can go to worldshealthiestfoods.com.
See how wonderful Mother Nature puts things together. There's a friend of mine, his name is Ed Bowman from the Bowman College, is a nutritionist, PhD in nutrition. What he says is, eat fruits and vegetables, seeds and nuts, herbs and spices, have a nice day, and you've got a recipe for really having a good life, at least as far as the nutrition part is concerned. So these tips that you give us on special foods are really interesting, and there's so much more perfectly put together than anything we can put together that comes in the form of a pill. Because we don't understand the biochemistry of the body anywhere near as well as you people out there think. We really do not. You're looking at tens of thousands of reactions that are occurring every millisecond in the body in a very sophisticated way. And the biophysics behind all that is a mystery for the most part, and that is where the action is. So when you're taking an herb or a spice or a fruit or a vegetable or a seed or a nut into your body, you've been working with nature for tens of thousands of years to work out a balance that makes sense for your particular metabolism. When you're taking a pill and you're interrupting the biochemistry of the body, you know, you don't see things like supplements and herbs and antibiotics and other pharmaceutical drugs growing on trees. Those are made by man.
Yeah, let's go pick a vitamin C.
Yeah, right.
I think I need a little extra magnesium today.
Well, see, we think that even the supplements and herbs are just fine. We shouldn't worry about that, but we should worry about that, because there's nothing, it's like playing a symphony in the body. If you've got a symphony that's balanced, you've got violins and cellos and pianos and singers all in a balance, but you throw in 1,000 bass drums into a symphony, what do you think you have? It's called a mess. So you take a whole bunch of magnesium or a whole bunch of vitamin C or a whole bunch of anything, you're creating a problem. So I love this idea of your tips that talk about all the wonderful things that work out. You don't have to worry about doing an experiment like we do with drugs when we bring them to market. We got a drug out to market. We don't know that much about it because we haven't studied it that well. And then all of a sudden, we're finding out that there are side effects that we didn't anticipate. And then there's a black box warning. And then the drug is taken off the market. And people are having all kinds of side effects. And it goes on and on.
And my next 2020 tip at 22 the hour, I'm going to talk about some often overlooked health foods.
Okay. So the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. The number is 888-874-4888, and it's time for a short station break. So we'll be back right after that with more information about more diabetes drugs that cause cancer.
So stay close.
You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Lynn Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. If you have a question about us, it looks like we have a caller, Beverly from New York. Hi, Beverly. Are you on the line? I guess she's not. Okay. The lines are open. The number is 888-874-4888. We said we're going to talk something about cancer, bladder cancer, and diabetes.
Okay. Well, you know, remember how a certain number of accidents have to occur before the authorities will put up a stop sign? And this reminds me of drugs and how they aren't taken off the market until a certain amount of people suffer serious adverse effects. And then sometimes they even remain on the market with a black box warning. And what's occurring with the glitazone diabetic drugs like Actos and Avandia? France and Germany took Actos off the market for causing bladder cancer significantly. And I think we're still seeing Actos ads on TV.
Yeah, well, that's right. And unfortunately, that's what's happened with Avandia as well, as you're mentioning. When you're talking about the incidence of bladder cancer, first of all, it's a little high in people who have diabetes, probably about 20 or 30% higher than the general population. And then you take a drug like Actos or Avandia, and you have a risk that's two or three times higher than what you see with people who are taking other drugs that are used to treat diabetes that cause bladder cancer, and increase that a little bit too. So the overall increase that we're seeing in bladder cancer is about four to five times the rate of people who are not taking those drugs after taking it for 4 or 5 years.
That's terrible, because when you have diabetes, you also have an increased risk of bladder cancer anyway.
That's right. Then
you take these glitazones, and even the sulfonylureas, those increase it also. So together, it increases it four times. So.
That's right. So what we're looking at is some drugs here that are accounting for about 20% of all the drugs that are used to treat diabetes. And they're taken by about 15 million Americans, and Actos itself is the ninth most common pharmaceutical drug on the market. And here it has all these problems.
Well, you know, they took Rezolin off the market also. That was another glitazone for liver failure. So people that have diabetes are going to be saying, well, what can I do then? And also they might want to know, what about metformin? Is that one okay?
Well, metformin probably is okay, but it's not one that you'd like to use in front of lifestyle. And the problem is our lifestyle is the most powerful medicine that we have, and we're just really not paying that much attention to it. So, yes, a drug like that is one that we can use that gives a pretty good result if people are not going to do lifestyle. But I'm always going back and looking for the drugs, are looking for lifestyle, because it's diet and exercise that literally can cure almost all people who have type 2 diabetes.
And, you know, this article says that they're bringing this up about how these diabetic drugs can increase the risk of bladder cancer. And they think that it's going to be very helpful for doctors, because then the doctors can check for signs of bladder cancer, like blood in the urine. Well, isn't that a little late? I mean, we're checking for signs of bladder cancer. Why aren't we preventing signs of bladder cancer?
Well, we should be preventing all this business by doing what smart medicine is. And that's, of course, it goes back to lifestyle. Just because we have drugs that do things, they can make things a little better, and we're silly enough to allow the pharmaceutical companies to have direct-to-consumer ads that really lie to us about the benefits of what they're trying to sell to us. They just basically want to keep us using their drugs because it's a return on investment for them and it's good for their stockholders. But it's not what medicine should be about. Medicine obviously should be about what can we do to take care of ourselves? How are we going to feel as good as we can? How do we strengthen that buffer zone that we have, that it is between perfect health and where we start to have symptoms and begin to get sick?
Well, just like recently, it came out that a doctor at the Mayo Clinic wants to categorize lack of exercise as a medical condition, because exercise is so important. And one of the things we know is that it really helps with diabetes. It's very important with diabetes, as well as many other things like blood pressure and your bones and your muscles and everything else. But I guess they think that if they medicalize it, maybe health insurance will pay for it and it'll make it in a different category.
Well, that would be a big shift in what we're doing. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We've been talking about is lack of exercise a medical condition, almost looking at it as though it's a disease. The answer is absolutely it is, and we should be doing as much as we can to stay fit, just like we should be eating healthy food and we should be getting plenty of sleep. And should weigh what we should weigh and have less stress. All these things are things that we should be focusing on to make sure that we have good health. And think of all the good things that that would do in terms of improving the health of people in this country that would lower health care costs, would make us much more functional, and we'd have better quality of life.
You sleep better, have less depression, have more energy, endurance, strength. It detoxifies us. It helps our weight. We have such a problem with obesity. Quality of life, it helps our lungs, our heart, everything. Flexibility reduces inflammation. The whole ball of wax. So get out there and pump that iron and walk around the block.
Well, where can you find a pill that does all that? You can't. And that's why the most powerful anti-aging approach we have as well is exercise. You don't want to be thinking about anti-aging hormones. You want to think about what you can do to control your health yourself by doing the things in lifestyle that matter. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls again. And there are a few calls waiting after Vicki's final 2020 tip.
Some often overlooked health foods would be celery. You know, celery is very rich in antioxidants, and it can help the body fight disease. And if you eat four or more sticks per day, it can decrease your blood pressure.
Isn't that neat?
So if you don't like celery much and you don't want to eat it plain, what you can do is put a little peanut butter in it, put a little cream cheese in it.
There goes the low-calorie celery.
Put some yogurt in it with chili peppers.
Right.
Chop it up and put it in your salads, put it in your deviled eggs and your vegetables, all those kind of things. Cabbage, this is also a nutritional superstar that's packed with vitamin C and antioxidants, and it's lower in fat and calories than any other vegetable. So find ways to add that to your diet. And also lentils, those are loaded with fiber and have more folate than spinach. If you have a couple lentils a day, it's great. And if you don't like this lentil soup, try some Indian dal.
It's a great way to alkalinize your diet too, because our diets are so acid. Always talking about pH balancing. Well, lentils is a good way to do that.
And seaweed is loaded with calcium and potassium, and it's also important to maintain normal blood pressure. So seasoned seaweed is kind of like kale chips from what I understand, and you don't have to just eat sushi. But, you know, they have, what do you call it, vegetarian sushi, too, that doesn't, or vegan sushi that
that's
doesn't
amazing.
Have fish in.
Vegetarian sushi.
Yeah.
I suppose that's like made out of tofu or something.
Well, no, it has vegetables and avocado and a little rice and lettuce and that kind of thing.
So for people who don't like sushi, that might be a great substitute.
So you can get your seaweed in that way.
Right.
Or go take a swim in the ocean. Hemp seeds. Hemp seeds is not the stuff that some people smoke, although it is in the same family. And what you can do with those hemp seeds is just sprinkle them on just about anything. Salad, pasta, oatmeal, you get the point. And it's high in protein. 1 ounce has 11 grams of protein. Actually, I put hemp seeds in my smoothies. I put it in my vegetable drinks. And also know that they're high in omega-3s and 6s, just like flaxseed oil. And last but not least on my list here are scallops. A lot of people think that scallops aren't healthy, but scallops are 80% protein, and they're a really high source, good source of magnesium and potassium. And some people are worried about sauteing them in butter and think you have to do it in oil, but most of the processed oils you buy are no good, and because they're processed. And what you want to do is use organic butter and saute them. Yum, 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 yum. And maybe put some vegetables with that, and those are pretty good. A little lots of Chardonnay, except you got to be careful of that buttery flavor kind.
That's right.
Because it might have artificial butter.
That's right.
There's always something.
All right, a great tip. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And it looks like we have a pile of calls here that have come in. So let's go back and take a call from Beverly. I think she's back on the line. Hi, Beverly.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
You have a question for us?
Yes. How do you, what can you take for shingles?
You already have the shingles now?
Yes.
And you and they're painful?
No, not so much. Very itchy, though.
All right, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. We're having a few technical problems. I was just in the middle of explaining to Beverly what she could do for her shingles. And one of the things she could do is vitamin C in different forms. Another is infrared light therapy, which really works pretty well. And I've had reasonable success with that. And that's something that is unfortunately not something that you can get that easily because there are not a whole lot of people that do it. So that's my advice to you, Beverly. Thanks for calling.
All right,
it looks like
you.
We have another call from Pam in Boston. Pam, are you there? Good.
Hello?
You have a question for us?
Yes, I have a question. I know that it's really healthy to sleep like at least 8 hours, I guess, every night.
Yes.
But I just had a baby. Oh, I didn't just have. I had a baby a few months ago, and. Huh. He nurses at night, and he started teething a little while ago, so he actually wakes up between 4, sometimes 7 times a night to nurse.
Can you sleep during the day?
Can I sleep during the day?
Yeah.
I bet you can sleep anytime.
Well, I try to nap when he naps, but I usually have a lot of things to do during the day. Like, I work from home, so it's not that easy. Like, I can take maybe a 20-minute nap sometimes. So, but yeah. I don't sleep very much. I sleep, he wakes up for every half hour or so, every half hour to 45 minutes between 11 and 4 in the morning, like 4:30. So, I'm wondering, like, is it incredibly unhealthy that I'm not, that, I mean, I haven't been sleeping very much for the past few months.
I have a lot of sympathy for what you're going through, but I don't really have a solution for it except maybe sleeping in the daytime with the baby. Being a mom is a pretty full-time job.
Or maybe having a little lavender oil around. I don't know about putting it on a baby's skin, but maybe you could put a little on yourself, and then when you're holding the baby would get the benefit of smelling that. Or maybe diluting it with some a carrier oil like jojoba oil or almond oil and putting a little bit on the bottom of your baby's feet. That might help to calm the baby.
Isn't that a great idea? Yeah, I checked with your pediatrician about it.
Okay. All right, thank you. Yeah, he hardly sleeps during the day, actually, since he's teething. I guess it's so annoying to him that when he falls asleep during the day, he only sleeps for maybe 15 minutes at a time, like 3 times a day. So.
You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. I'm sorry we've had some technical difficulties working today, but here we're back.
Thank you for staying with us.
Yeah. We're talking about MDs. Should they be paid for performance? And basically the summary on that is one size doesn't fit all. Benchmarks are different for different patients. Numerical targets for hospital readmissions, the use of certain drugs, cost control, etc., are problems that are dealt with, but there's not so much a dealing with people and how sometimes they're always different. And so what we have to do is go back to a system that is looking at how a doctor can be a doctor rather than how a doctor can look at meeting benchmarks that are going to give that person a better income. It should be a financial thing. It should be something that is much different from that point of view.
And, you know, here they're going ahead with a little evidence showing that it's going to improve survival or public health, and yet it's being implemented, and it's not proven to work anyplace.
Well, that's true.
And, you know, with this control of health workers, it seems like they'll lose their motivation, and there's a temptation to upcode a diagnosis because that yields higher payment.
Well, that's right. And so we need to find ways to be doctors rather than to be people who are trying to make the HMO people happy with what we're doing, or to make the Affordable Care Act something that's going to be more reasonable.
And have robot doctors.
Well, that's really right. And so that's something we need to pay attention to and change. I think that when we have these conflicts of interest, they compromise health care in a massive sort of way. And we have gotten so much into the idea that profit is what things are about that we've forgotten about service. And when you don't have service in health care, what have you got? You're right back to a place where governmental control is taking over. We've got rules and regulation that don't give you any flexibility. I remember back in the 1990s when all this was starting to happen and everybody's talking about HMO medicine. And I did a grand rounds at my local hospital, and I warned everybody and said, you cannot sell out your practices. You cannot stop being private practitioners.
Nobody listened to you.
No, nobody listened. And look what happened. Everything I predicted did happen. And now we work for big organizations who tell us what to do, and rather than us being able to do the kinds of things we want to do for our patients. So we've lost the old doctor, the old style of doctor, who would be interested in you as a person, who would spend time with you, who had the flexibility of being able to do any kind of treatment that he thought was appropriate or she thought was appropriate for you.
Well, I think it's also important to understand the health care reform's Affordable Health Care Act and how that's going to affect us. Because the Affordable Care Act claims don't provide for an increase in health care costs. And, you know, with 30 million more people added to Medicaid and Medi-Cal, it's expected to improve health care with the same amount of money and the same amount of doctors. And very few doctors in California now even accept Medi-Cal. If they want to be seen, they have to pay out of pocket.
Well, that's really right. So we've got a problem here that's, again, massive. So we're looking at increase in costs, paying doctors more fees, trying to make the budget balance for health care, and what we're finding is we're having to cut services. Medicare is already losing 2% a year of the funding that it's had, and it will do that for the next 10 years, which means we'll be down to about 20% less in the way of health care by that time. And when you look at what's happening at Medicaid, that varies from state to state immensely. So when we're looking at the reimbursement fees in a state like Wyoming, it's actually 150% of the Medicare rate. It's paid for Medicaid, which is stunning to me because that means they're paying more for that than they are for Medicare. And yet a state like New Jersey was down as low as 37%. And, of course, the way doctors respond to that is that they accept patients if they make more money. And if they don't make enough money, they don't accept them. And when you look at health care, what it costs to run an office, you're looking at $200-$300 an hour, and you're only making $150 or $200 an hour, you're losing money. And so from that point of view, the doctors are really in a really tough place as to decide what to do. So when you're looking at Medicaid to Medicare fees in general across the country, if you pay $100, you get $100 back for a service in Medicare, on the average, you're going to get $74 for Medicaid. And, of course, that's going to get worse as we find more people coming into the system, and we have problems that are related to that and the fact that we're promising to pay doctors more money because of part of the Affordable Care Act. We're in trouble.
Yeah, you know, that government survey showed that last year almost one in three doctors' offices declined to accept new Medicaid and Medi-Cal patients.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, it depends on the state that you're in. And that's why you're seeing all kinds of things happen that are different in different states. I mean, when you're looking at Wyoming at 99% acceptance, you're looking at New Jersey at 40% acceptance, and California at 57% acceptance, you know that there are different standards depending on how each state's finances are working and what they can afford.
Well, health care reform has turned out to be a business. It's not a service. And, you know, some of this Affordable Care Act is good, but a lot of it's just really messed up in their lies, really.
Well, I think that's right, and so that's something that we're just going to have to ponder, because if we go with what the government is telling us to do, it's not going to work. We don't have a system that can work, so we need to make a shift there. Anyway, we're at the end of our show here, and I'd like to remind you that we're back live to talk about what's new in the news in health and take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and DrSabuto.com from 1 to 2 Eastern Time and 10 to 11 Pacific Time. Prescriptions for health will also be available 24/7 on DrSabuto.com as well as PRN.FM.
And if you've enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics we discussed, go to Dr. Saputo Radio on DrSabuto.com and check out our fast track videos. And remember, lifestyle is the most important, powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Have a great week. We'll be back to see you next Monday.